Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find higher and common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. So tonight it's my pleasure to welcome Tom T. Moore, and I'm going to read his bio, which is written in the first person, so don't think I'm talking about me. My name is Tom T. Moore, and I'm the author of 5 books, including The Gentle Way, a self-help guide for those who believe in angels, The Gentle Way 2, The Story Continues, and The Gentle Way 3, Master Your Life. I was voted Best Self-Help Author for 2014, 15, and 16 by the readers of Health and Happiness magazine. They said I set a record as no one had ever won any of their categories 3 years in a row. I show people how to request most benevolent outcomes, which I call MBOs, in their lives. It's 100 times better than the law of attraction. One of my readers wrote in and said the law of attraction was like driving an old Ford Pinto, and requesting MBOs is like driving a Ferrari. Both may get you there, but the Ferrari will get you there a lot faster, and I can attest to that. I used to drive a Pinto. It was my first car. That's me speaking. My first book dealt quite a bit about my travels, as I'm the CEO of an international film and TV program distribution company, and my travels took me to film markets in such places as Cannes, Milan, Budapest, St. Petersburg, Russia, and Prague. I have been guest on many radio shows, have been interviewed on Gollum TV, and have a TV series based on my book on Roku's channel EPTV titled The Telepathic World of Tom T. Moore. His press website is, and get your pens handy for this, I'm going to give it to you. It's on the World Wide Web. It's media.thegentlewaybook.com. And so let me welcome Tom. Tom, how are you tonight?
I'm good, but let me kind of correct the media is for press people, and my regular website is www.thegentlewaybook.com. So don't put media there, otherwise it's not that it's only for press people.
Would you repeat that one more time for people that might not have had their pens handy?
Sure. www.thegentlewaybook.com.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that. So, Tom, how long have you been interested in angels, and how did you find your pathway to believing in them and working with them?
Sure. Started a long time ago. I'm one of the older guys, and back in the late 60s, I had a snow ski club that eventually turned out to be the largest in Texas, where I'm located, and but it only worked during the winter, and I had to look for other kind of work in the summer, and so one day I was reading the Dallas Morning News, and they had an interview with an astrologer, and his hobby was the Dallas Cowboys. And he said, well, they're not going to the Super Bowl this year, and they'd never gone at that time, but they're going to go next year. And I said, gosh, I've never read anything like that. So I tore the article out, put it in my desk, and at the end of the football season, dragged it out. And lo and behold, he had hit on about 8 out of the 10 reasons he had given. So I said, I don't know how this guy does it, but I reserve 300 seats, airline seats, a year in advance for the Super Bowl down in Miami. And I was the first tour operator to ever run a trip to the Super Bowl from Dallas. So that was my start. I said, well, gosh, I need to learn a little bit more about this. So I started having my ski club parties on, moon trines, Venus, or Venus sextile Mars, or whatever. And it was quite successful. I made a lot of money off of the Super Bowl, and it allowed me to start a travel agency and eventually a tour company and eventually a wholesale tour company where we were sending thousands of people all over the place. So that was my start. And then jumping to 1979, I just started recording my dreams. And about 2 weeks in, I had a vivid dream of an explosion with a woman and some men involved. And my wife and I were supposed to be going to Manila for a worldwide congress of travel agents. We canceled that portion of the trip, added on to Hong Kong and Taipei. First day of the congress, terrorists blew up a bomb in the front of the hall, injuring several travel agents. And after that, I said I'd record my dreams the rest of my life. So that kind of started. I always was looking and experimenting. And I've tried the law of attraction before it was even called the law of attraction, and I just found it didn't work very well.
Question. Do you believe it was angels who came to you in your dreams to prophesize for you?
Yes. Well, I've asked lots of questions in my what I call my active meditations about that, and I'm told that we do have dream angels. One of the things that we do is that we are sent all over the universe to help solve problems for other societies because we're the big problem solvers of the universe. That's one of the things we do. Then the other thing is that we look in on past lives and even future lives, parallel lives, and they're all jumbled together. We can, in the quantum dream state, we can draw from one and draw from another, and it becomes, they could be symbolic dreams, like I dreamed before the I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's all right. I just wanted to jump in and clarify. When you say we in our spiritual selves, in our mortal bodies, can do these things?
Well, okay, yes. In other words, during our dream state, and I'm talking about everybody in the world, we go into that quantum dream state. And,
gotcha.
Where all these, and most of the dreams, you really have to work hard and concentrate to remember these dreams each morning. But I have a dream book, which anyone can have a notebook and put it beside their bed with a little pen light and a pen, and wake up in the middle of the night and record your dreams or record them the first thing in the morning. But it's very helpful because it really it gives you a lot of information of things that are coming for you, whether it be challenges or whether it be something really great in your life. So I highly recommend recording dreams. It also sets you up for meditation where you can contact your own guardian angel.
Aha. Uh-huh. And how do we do that?
If someone's already meditating, it's easier than for someone starting the first time, but anyone can do it. Instead of going deep into meditation, you only go into that state where you're at when you first wake up from dreams, which is why it's great to record your dreams, because you get used to that in-between state between sleep and in between being wide awake. And when you're in that state, you can After you get to that point, you can say, okay, I wish to speak to my guardian angel, and then you connect.
Now, do we have more than one guardian angel, or how does that work?
No, I've been told in these meditations that our guardian angels are tremendously powerful. They're not like what I used to think of when you saw It's a Wonderful Life, you know, the little tinkling bell and the guardian angel. It's not like that. These guardian angels are ancient whole souls that emit a golden light, and they're called golden light beings. And my guardian angel, who I named Theo because he says humans cannot pronounce angelic names, he said, you could call me Tom, Dick, or Harry, but Tom would be difficult in your meditations. So I thought for a while,
when you say
I came up with
ancient whole souls, does that mean that they are comprised of a multitude of lifetimes of an oversoul that have transitioned into the light?
No. I'm told that these are souls that were birthed perhaps by by a creator or whatever, and through experience where they can send pieces of themselves out all over our universe and other universes. There's actually billions of other universes and billions of other creators. And they send pieces of themselves out to learn, and slowly but surely they raise their vibrational level to the point where they glow, emit this golden light. And Theo takes care of 27,000 souls and all of the soul fragments in each in my soul group. As an example, there are 8 soul fragments. On average, there are 6 to 12 soul fragments in each soul group, or as Theo calls them, a soul cluster.
I'm confused, and I may have missed this. What is a soul fragment?
Okay. A soul fragment is what we are.
Okay,
our souls,
that's what I thought.
Our souls may be having 500,000 to a million lives all over the universe at the same time for its learning, for each soul's learning. Okay.
Okay.
But the Earth is the most important portion that they volunteered for, and so in each soul cluster will be 6 to 12 fragments. So as an example, my soul made me, my soul interests are religions. Another soul fragment in my group, his interests are, is exploration. So in his lives on Earth, he's been an explorer many, many times. He was the uncle of Marco Polo, and did the Silk Road before Marco Polo.
Uh-huh. Well, you say our planet seems to be extremely important, but I noticed that you had written a book on conversations with an ET. So do they have guardian angels, and how are they different or the same as us or similar to us?
Okay. No, we're the only ones that require guardian angels to look out for us, because we're the only beings in the universe that are veiled from knowing our true selves. And the reason is the creator of this universe wanted to have what has become known as the Earth experiment, where all the soul fragments or the people having lives would not know their majesty. They would not be able to, they would have to make decisions on their own without knowing, oh, I had a past life on this planet, or I had a past life on Earth where this is the way I handle that program. Each life, we have to sort of reinvent the wheel, and the Creator believes that we will come up with new ways to solve problems that has never been thought of before.
Question. I've had the experience of getting in touch with about a dozen past lives, three of them through multi-life therapy with the renowned psychic Mary Blake, and the others have come to me. And it sounds like there's a lot of other lifetimes out there. I'm wondering,
yes,
based on what you had previously said, is it possible for us to wake up and transcend the veil in this lifetime?
No. We're always going to be veiled, but, you know, that's, again, that's for our soul's learning. So,
okay,
as an example, each soul fragment has an average of 600 to 800 lives. And I said, well, why is there such a big difference? Theo said, well, some souls like to get things over with fast, and other souls will take their time. So it's like if you've ever come across someone that it seems like something is happening in their life every single minute of the day. I mean, I call them drama queens in a way. It's because these souls are wanting to get these lives over with fast, and so they cram a lot of experiences and challenges and all into each life.
Uh-huh. Is there such a thing as a young soul and an old soul?
In terms of earth lives, yes. So,
in terms,
yes. So, in other words, you can have a newbie soul that only has maybe less than 5 or 10 lives. Okay, those are new souls just having their first lives on Earth. And
well, that was my suspicion, and I think that's why it's so important for us to not judge other people and to be patient with them.
Yes.
Because it had been my belief that there are some of us who are old souls or older souls, and that we need to be patient with other of God's children who may not have had as many as advances as us. What would you say about that?
Correct. Absolutely. The younger souls are still still wandering around, and they make lots of mistakes. I don't want to get too much into politics, but I was told that Donald Trump is a younger soul, and his soul contract in this life is to learn how to handle great wealth. But he doesn't have the seasoning to be the leader of of the biggest country on earth. Okay.
All I'll say is help us.
We may lose a few listeners with that comment. I'm just telling you what Spirit told me, and so I, you know, don't kill the messenger.
I'm just
the guy passing the word. So in other words, you've got. Last weekend I spoke to, I did a speaking engagement, and most of the people that were in the group were younger souls. They had had under 300 lives, some of them probably under 250. So in other words, they were still considered a younger soul and not a medium soul. And then, of course, the seasoned soul, as Theo calls them, are, you know, people that are up over, you know, 500 or whatever, depending on how many lives they're kind of scheduled. And I was just told this, and it'll probably be in my next free newsletter that I put out on a meditation. It was either in this newsletter or the next one that Theo said, now, Tom, please understand, this is not set numbers. So if somebody in the 600 group needs 610, you know, fine. If somebody in the 800 sort of group only needs 795 or maybe 815, this is just we wanted to try and show you the difference in philosophical beliefs of the souls.
Okay. Well, this is just an aside to the callers on the line. We will take your calls in the last 15 to 20 minutes of the program, so please hang in there. So, Tom, excuse the little aside there.
Okay, no problem. And but I will mention, I do have all of my newsletters from 2007 on, all archived on my website. And if anyone wants to read this material, they can go to the website, and on the homepage, there's a little blue box, and just click on the link to subscribe to the free newsletter.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say about angels before I might ask more questions about that? And then, as I mentioned, I'd like to talk about Most Benevolent Outcomes and then your Gentle Way books.
Sure. As we get into Most Benevolent Outcomes, I think you'll find I'll be still talking about guardian angels and such. So let's go into that then.
Let's go into that. Okay. Why don't you describe what you mean by most benevolent outcomes and
sure.
why it's better than the law of attraction.
Okay. The I was reading in the Sedona Journal of Emergence, 18 or 20 years ago, an article by Robert Shapiro, and he was channeling a creator type being by the name of Zosh, and Zosh said, you can request benevolent outcomes in your life. And I said, oh, that's kind of interesting. And so I started experimenting with it, and I just found that it worked perfectly. I'd never been able to say that about any modality that I had tried. And I started, real simply with little requests, like I request a and at that time, I was saying benevolent outcome for my drive to the post office or a parking spot in front of a busy restaurant, things like that, very mundane kind of things. And I started out saying benevolent outcome. Later, I would change it to most benevolent outcome because when you abbreviate, you don't want to say a request a BO, it doesn't
You don't want to limit the angels, right?
So anyway, I added most benevolent, and it works, MBOs. And so I started requesting these MBOs, and they did work perfectly. And as I grew to trust them by requesting these mundane things that were, I could get immediate feedback on, I started using them in my business, requesting when, especially when I got into the in the film business, I was requesting benevolent outcomes for sales, for meetings, when I'd go to Cannes for a world TV market or the Cannes Film Festival or whatever, I was requesting benevolent outcomes, and so that's how it grew. Then I started submitting a couple of articles to the Sedona Journal of Emergence. The articles got such a good response that they put it on their website. And finally, I've been a columnist for them for over 8 years, supplying them with stories that are sent to me from all over the world from people requesting benevolent outcomes in their life and their successes. And they publish 2 to 3 pages of them every month in their publication.
Does it help when people reach out to others to share their wishes for most benevolent outcomes?
It can, depending on the person's belief system. As an example, when the same publishing company that does the Sedona Journal published my first book, The Gentle Way, A Self-Help Guide for Those Who Believe in Angels, I took the book to a Mormon bookstore in Dallas, and he looked over the book and he said, oh, we can't carry this book. We only pray to Jesus. And I didn't have an answer for him at that time. And later I would understand that requesting benevolent outcome, you can believe that it goes to your guardian angel, to Jesus, to God, to Allah to an archangel to a Hindu deity, Buddha. It doesn't matter, because these requests work perfectly, whatever your belief is.
Was Jesus an angel in human form?
No. Other than, I mean, we're all angels, okay? He was.
Yes.
He was a fragment of a whole soul, but he was the largest fragment of a whole soul. There was no soul cluster. He was the only fragment, and so his fragment was larger than any other soul fragment on earth, and therefore he was the greatest person to ever walk the earth because of that. Okay?
Thank you.
His aura of white, actually people could see. I mean, that's how strong it was. So that's, all the other religious leaders on earth have been members of a soul cluster.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that, and thank you for affirming that we're all angels.
We are.
Yeah, I believe that.
We've got,
yeah.
It's just that, as an example, Theo, he says they prefer being called servants of the Creator, but nobody would know what that meant. So, you know, we use the term guardian angel, but they like the term servants of the Creator.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say about most benevolent outcomes?
Well, okay, yes. First of all, Webster's Dictionary defines benevolent as doing or inclined to do good, kindly, and charitable. That's what your guardian angels love doing for you, but you have to ask. And I said, well, who made up that rule? And he said, well, your souls did, and we're only supposed to help you if you ask, or if you're in danger of losing your life and you're supposed to live to be a much farther along. So that's how that kind of works, okay? There are rules for requesting benevolent outcomes. First of all, you must request the assistance. And just as I mentioned, if you don't, then you wander along, and you can wander off your soul path. That's one of the great things about requesting benevolent outcomes, is that it keeps you on your soul path. And it also automatically starts raising your vibrational level, which some people call ascension. It's the easiest possible way, I was told, that you can possibly raise your vibrational levels, is simply by requesting benevolent outcomes in your life every day. Okay. Number two, it must be benevolent not only for you, but for everyone connected with the request. So as an example, a soldier in Afghanistan couldn't say, I request most benevolent outcome to kill my enemy before he kills me. That doesn't work. It's not benevolent for everyone. But if he says, I request the most benevolent outcome to come back from this patrol safely, that'll work. Or mm-hmm. I request the most benevolent outcome for my driving this transport vehicle from Kabul to my outpost. That works, okay? So that's number two. Number three, it must be a request for you specifically. Benevolent prayers are what you say for other people.
Okay.
And we can get into that in a minute. Number four, it must be said out loud or in writing, because it turns out that saying these benevolent outcomes with your voice, scientists, I've been told, will one day discover that the power of your voice is much more than you can imagine. Okay. Number five, there is no limit on the number of times you can request benevolent outcomes. I've requested probably 20 or 30,000, who knows, and there's no limit. And I mentioned that because some people say, oh, I don't want to bother my guardian angel you know, they're probably busy, or, you know, I don't feel worthy, you know, requesting help or something like that. They would love to assist you in even the most mundane things, getting a seat on a subway or a bus, you name it, but you have to ask for the assistance. Number six, trust in the process. Start with the mundane to build your trust and to make it a habit. Because if you don't make it a habit, when you're in danger of possibly losing your life or something, you will not remember to request a benevolent outcome to get out of the danger if you have not made it a habit of doing it every day.
Thank you.
So, I can give you some your listeners some samples.
Okay, but I want to leave you enough time to talk about your books, and we do have callers, so
okay.
Perhaps you want to make the examples brief.
I will. Okay. As an example, samples of MBO requests. You can request, you could say, I request the most benevolent outcome for the perfect job for me. Okay? Now, you have to be patient on these big ones, because maybe the person in that perfect job right now has to leave the company, be promoted, whatever. Okay? So you have to be patient when you ask these things. Number two, I request the most benevolent outcome for the perfect mate for me. And again, be patient. I've had ladies especially email and say, I requested this a month ago and nothing's happened, you know. So be patient. These things, that person may be in a relationship right now, you know, and has to break it off or whatever. And I request the most benevolent outcome for the perfect home for me. It worked perfectly the last time we bought a house. We'd been looking all over the place, made an offer. Somebody paid the full price. We lost that. And finally I said, I request the most benevolent outcome for the perfect home for me. And my wife found it the next day. Now, here's one that everyone really should say along. I request a most benevolent outcome that my identity in all its forms be protected now and forever. Thank you.
Oh, I love
okay.
it.
Yeah, that's a great one. So
that's wonderful. And I trust that kind of implied in these rules that you suggested, you did suggest that it serves the highest good for all, or at least that it causes no harm to anybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
It has
okay.
to be benevolent for everyone involved in the request, even
okay.
kind of remotely. So just keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Traveling, when you travel, when you drive to work, when you go to the airport, when you go through airport security, these are great, great things. I mean, when I leave the house, I say, I request the most benevolent outcome for my drive to Chase Bank. I request the most benevolent outcome for my drive to the post office. Then I request the most benevolent outcome for my drive to, the postal connection to pick up my mail. And then I request the most benevolent outcome for my drive home. So each time, I do it all in advance, as far in advance as you can, because you'll find that the farther in advance you can request these things, especially when I'm going to go on a long trip or we're driving or like we did last weekend, to this resort where I had a speaking engagement and it was a six-hour drive. I was requesting benevolent outcome for the drive, for the weather to be good, yada, yada, anything that I could think of. And it works. So, and then you can request benevolent outcomes for business each day. This is especially great for people that are on commissions, whether it be waiting tables or real estate or whatever. In a department store, request a benevolent outcome for work each day. And at work, you can request benevolent outcomes for meetings, and especially if you're suffering any kind of abuse. You can request a benevolent outcome for a meeting with your boss, their boss, even someone outside of the company, because no one deserves to be abused.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about your books.
Okay.
Did it begin with The Gentle Way?
Oh, yeah. The Gentle Way, I finally, well, I went to a seminar put on by Dick Sefflin in Sedona, Arizona, on increasing your psychic ability. And Robert Shapiro and I had become friends, and he had he had channeled this Indian shaman by the name of Reveals the Mysteries. And I asked Reveals the Mysteries, is my sole contract to support Robert's work? Because he's channeled probably 40 or 50 books now. And I was told no. And I thought that was real strange. So when I went to this psychic seminar thing, I decided to try and contact Reveals the Mysteries. And so when he put us under, I said, Reveals the Mysteries, are you there now? And he said, yes, I am. And I said, oh, this is great. And I asked him, why was I the one pushing this? And he said, Tom, he said, you're an Indian shaman at the same time I am living, which was in the 1600s in the Western United States. Your name is Stillwater, and you had decided to incarnate into the 20th and 21st centuries to reintroduce people to the Gentle Way. Later, I finally found out that the Gentle Way dates back all the way to a life I had about 12,700 years ago when it was on Poseidia, and I had a million people requesting benevolent outcomes. So this is a real old modality.
Mm.
And so he said, you're going to write books. I said, books? I said, I'm a business guy, you know? I thought I'd be, distributing movies and TV programs till I retired. And he said, no books. And so I said, okay. And he said, you're going to reintroduce people to the Gentle Way. And I got the name of the book the first time I ever communicated with him. So that's how that came about. I wrote the book in probably less than 90 days, and it stayed at a very good seller for 2006. So it's been 10 years, and it still sells really well.
Good, good. I love to hear stories like that.
So the other two came about because so many people keep sending in their stories to me about their successes that the publishing company came out with The Gentle Way 2, which is The Story Continues, and The Gentle Way 3, A Self-Help Guide for Those, The Gentle Way 3, Master Your Life.
What's that about?
Well, it just has, the publisher said, Tom, we want to arrange all these stories in chapters, like for work, for travel, hospital, whatever. I mean, really serious stuff and mundane stuff. And we'll arrange them, and you write an opening chapter and a closing one, and we'll do all the other work. And I said, oh, that's great. And so it has over 300 stories in it that people have sent in. Some of them, dangerous situations that happened to them where they could have been seriously hurt and were not.
I have a question. I was recalling a dangerous situation I was in that should have resulted in disaster, and that didn't happen, and I wasn't requesting a most benevolent income that I was conscious of, but I do believe angels intervened at that point in time. How can you explain
Sure.
something like that?
Well, as I explained to you before, they're not supposed to assist us unless we are in danger, and it's not on our sole contract to be hurt or possibly killed. And so, yes, they will step in at that time. But, you know, the best thing to do is, of course, request vanilla ice comes free to drive. As an example,
yes.
I rented a car in Nice, France, and started driving over to Cannes for a TV market, and a little French car zoomed past me, lost control, hit the middle guardrail, bounced back on to the three-lane road right in front of me, but I had plenty of time to stop and inch around him at 10 kilometers an hour. And then it happened again. I was coming back from a haircut, and I got off the North Dallas Tollway onto Legacy, which is a major thoroughfare through Plano, where I live. And at the first signal light, this big black pickup truck in front of me, but on the left-hand center lane, broadsided a woman who, for some reason, didn't see him and hit her at like 40 miles an hour and lifted the whole SUV off the road and spun it around 180 degrees right in front of me. I slammed on the brakes and came within 6 feet of her driver's door. So,
wow.
You know, I believe in them.
I bet you do. Well, what else would you like to say about your books?
Well, I also put in, and some people didn't even want me to put this in because some people don't believe in gambling. But I will mention that, you know, you can request benevolent outcomes for bingo and games of chance, you know, but keep in mind that overall, there are sole contracts for people, a la like Donald Trump, to handle enormous wealth. And so, you know, if you're playing the lottery, maybe it's not in your sole contract to win the big pot. Just keep that in mind. It has to be a sole contract. Now, my family and I were on a cruise of the Caribbean, and I wound up winning half of the coverall pot on the very last day of the cruise, and it was half of $8,400 and paid for our cruise. But it was not something that was enormous, because I've been told I will never have enormous wealth in this life. I will just be comfortable.
Okay. Well, I have a question connected to money, and it's a question that I'm sure many people have asked, and that is if you can offer some explanation for why it is that such a small percentage of the world owns so much of the wealth.
Again, they could be young souls, they could be medium, whatever, but it's on their sole contract to learn to handle enormous wealth in their life.
Yeah, and likewise, some of us are meant to experience lives of poverty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's all learning. I mean, our souls have to have these lives to learn. Now, go ahead.
Is it possible to change the picture, though, if we so desire to change our soul's contract, or is it written in stone?
The way it's explained to me, you have a soul path or a soul contract, all right? Now, this is what you chose before this life in conjunction with your soul, with your guardian angel, with your with all the people that you will touch in your whole life, okay? And it's done in microseconds. And so this is your best best path that you could possibly have. Now, Theo says, you know, if you don't request benevolent outcomes, you can wander off the reservation, as he calls it, and take a path that is not for your highest and best learning and challenges and successes. I mean, you might even wind up, as an example, marrying a person that's in a soul group that you've worked with before, but you weren't supposed to particularly marry in this life, because that, you know, marrying them would not work as well as the other one. So when you request benevolent outcomes, it keeps you on that soul path.
Okay. I just wondered where free will entered in and where abundance in the universe enters in terms of any kind of parity, and I think you've kind of explained that already.
Yeah, it's you do have free will, okay? You can wander off the path, but it's not for your best interests.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Where
now,
are the best
one
place?
Thing I got to cover really quickly are benevolent
yes.
prayers, is what you say for other people. So in other words,
okay.
It took me to the second book to come up with this, because in the first book I have what are called living prayers, and they're all over the place. You know, and I said, I've got to come up with a way to have it where someone can say the same as requesting a benevolent outcome. And finally I came up with, I ask any and all beings to keep the people safe in the ruins of the Italian town that had this enormous earthquake until they are found. Thank you.
Thank you is a powerful word, isn't it?
Well, when I started out, I didn't say thank you. I just felt I need to, because when you start seeing this fantastic, magical help coming in your life, you want to be thankful, you know? So I think we should say thank you. You don't have to, but I do.
Are there prayers that are contrary to being benevolent for somebody that can actually cause harm to somebody that we don't want to say?
Gosh. Obviously, if you start praying for someone to be heard or something like that, you start building up karma, and as Theo calls it, balancing. So that's you know, that's not good.
Well, I had an idea.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I had an idea in mind, and that was, say there's somebody that's dying that really wants to be released from life, and yet their family is desperately clinging to them and wants them to stay, and the person who's dying picks up on that and seems to be held back. That was one thing I was thinking of when I mentioned what I was just talking about.
Yes, and certainly you can request a benevolent prayer for them to have an easy transition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, contrary to that is someone that really is wanting to cling to life. In my second book, I had a whole chapter about the passing of Joy. One of our friends, we went to a hospital where she was in critical condition. This was sudden. She had had a heart attack or something, and they didn't think she was going to make it, so we each were allowed to go in and say a few words to her. When I went in, I said, you know, Joy, if it would be a benevolent outcome for you, we release you, you know, the transition. And she didn't particularly like that, because when she passed away, on the way, I was leading her family to a friend's house for dinner, because it was dark, and I couldn't see the street signs because there were no street lights. I got out of my car to look at the street sign. When I started to get back in, the door slammed on my eye, and it cut the side of my eye just a little bit. I mean, you know, not the eyeball or anything, but the eye, and it gave me a black eye. And I later asked Theo about it, and he said, yes, Joy didn't think that was a very benevolent outcome, and so she slammed the door on you, and her death angel, and they prefer us calling them transition angels now, which I've just learned in the last year, and her transition angel, Margaret, was appalled that she did that. So It can work the other way, too.
I hear you. Well, where are the best places for people to buy your books?
Online is really the best place. Amazon or any of the book retailers that people typically will buy their books. My books are, you know, both in ebook form and good old print.
Well, I should mention to the listeners that Tom does have other books than the three Gentle Way books. So go to Amazon and type in Tom T. Moore, and his books will come up. Tom, if there's anything else you'd like to say about your books, let's come back to that, even if we have to go a little beyond the hour point, if you're open to that. And let's we just lost one of our callers. Let's take a call. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know who you are, but I'm talking to area code 856. What is your name, please?
Hi, this is Laura.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for asking. What would you like to say to Tom?
Well, are we able to ask psychic questions, or are we just talking about the books? I don't understand
Well, you can question him about whatever, and he'll let you know whether or not it's something he can answer. But what I suggest you might consider is any questions that have occurred as a result of what he's been sharing so far. Or anything that you want to know that he hasn't talked about.
Okay, so when the angels were talking to you about Donald Trump being a young soul, did you ask them what they said about Hillary's soul?
They said that she was a more seasoned soul, and I said, well, now see, President Obama, I'd been told years ago that he was going to go down in history, and historians don't figure this out for like 5 years, until 5 years after a president leaves office, but he would go down as one of the best presidents of the United States, and I was told this years ago, and so I just kind of sat back and said, okay, let's see how that works. And so I've been, I ask, if he was going to be one of the top presidents ever, how will Hillary rate as the next president? And I was told that, you know, because I thought maybe they'd say, well, she was a medium or something. And I was told that she will hit the ground running because she has all this assistance from her husband, President Obama, and the people that she will choose for these various jobs will really hit the ground running, and she will not be too far behind President Obama's class of presidents.
So the pay for play is going to make her a great president? That's what I'm not understanding. A seasoned soul makes her a shoe-in for next president? I don't see that.
Okay.
I think that between her and Obama, there's so much corruption there. I'm surprised to hear you say that.
All I can tell you is what I've been told, and certainly I've been accused by my Republican readers of being liberal, and I tell everybody, I work extremely hard, okay, to receive these messages perfectly, and I'll ask some of them over and over again. And one of the things I learned is that you have to ask about probabilities. And so probability, I'm told that the highest probability is, number one, she's not going to be indicted, okay? Number two, She has the highest probability of being the next president of the United States. Number three, that Donald Trump, his highest probability is that he'll go back to business because the Republicans will suffer such a large loss of seats. They'll lose the Senate and the House will narrow. They will not lose the House, but it will narrow. That's the highest probability of what's going to happen. Now, we all have to sit back and say, okay, let's see if this happens or not, because I'm in an 80 or 90% category. Certainly, I've been wrong before, but I've asked so many questions on this because my readers ask, and that all I can tell you is what I've received.
Okay. Well, I'll have to wait and see then and see how that goes.
Okay.
Well, we all will, won't we?
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, Laura, was there any question you wanted to ask for yourself, or are you satisfied for now?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you for calling, and you can keep listening if you want. I'm going to talk with Tom just a little bit more.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's interesting. You've had 80 to 90% for lack of a better word, success rate with your questions
accuracy
to the angels
rate.
In terms of what's panned out?
Yeah, exactly. And it's because everyone, you have to understand, everyone is a telepath. I'm a telepath, and everyone is a telepath because we have what's called a pineal gland in the back of our heads. And scientists have just figured out that it releases melatonin, okay? But they haven't figured out what else it does. And the pineal gland acts as a receptor for these telepathic messages, whether it be from your twin brother or a member of your family or your spouse, you know, where you're reading their thoughts. I mean, that's telepathy, okay? But telepathy works whether it's in the next room, the next town, all the way around the world, or it works all the way across the universe, and it works and it happens instantly, which tells you scientists have not figured out what the energy path that telepathic thoughts take. Okay, that's something that will not be figured out in our lifetime.
Excuse me if you've already mentioned this, but you mentioned something about psychic potential earlier in the show, and I'm wondering if that's addressed in any of your books.
Psychic potential?
Yeah. Didn't you say something about how we all have psychic potential, or am I getting confused?
Well, we all have the ability to be a telepath, okay?
Okay.
It just so happened that I worked very hard, and every time I would ask Theo, well, am I getting better in my reception? He'd keep saying, practice, 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 practice. So in other words, the more times that you go into this light meditative state and ask questions, then you get better. Luckily, I was starting to publish these weekly newsletters, and people started sending me in questions. So as an example, my latest book, which is Atlantis and Lemuria, The Lost Continents Revealed, I had one guy in the UK that sent me 500 questions. So it makes it easy. It makes it easy when you receive a lot of questions on a subject to come up, and that's how I came up with the book, that people from all over the world kept sending me in questions asking about Atlantis and Lemuria.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Atlantis and Lemuria are real as far as you're concerned.
Were. Yes. What? Atlantis
was people believe that, and I do too.
Okay.
In fact,
Atlantis
I was told.
Was located, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Atlantis was located in the Atlantic Ocean. That's why else was it called that? And it was 10% larger than the continent of Australia, is today. And Lemuria was located off the coast of Japan, and it got within 100 miles of Hawaii, and it was 12% larger than Australia. And people in Lemuria vacationed for thousands of years on Hawaii, which is why Hawaii is embedded with this Lemurian energy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever discover them?
No, because they destroyed themselves. First of all, Atlantis, the major portion of Atlantis sank 31,000 years ago. Due to the fact that there was a line of volcanoes, supergiant volcanoes, that bisected the continent, and it was sitting right on the mid-Atlantic ridge. Plates were clashing together. And so they all blew up at one time, and it only left Poseidia, which is about the size of Cuba, but round in shape, and on a line drawn out from the north of Boston out to the middle of Atlantic, and Erend and five other little small islands, 375 miles to the south on a line straight out from Washington, D.C. And it also, the Bahamas were left, Canary Islands, Bermuda, Azores, those were all remnants. And that's all that was left of Atlantis. The seas rose 160 feet at one time, wiping out every single civilization around the world on the coast of every continent. Millions of people died. And then 12,500 years ago, the Poseidians and Erends got into a war using laser weapons against each other, and they destroyed their islands. The seas rose 41 feet when that happened, and that was when the story of Noah happened. His boat actually did float away with that 41 feet, landed on the lower slopes of Mount Ararat, and his son married a girl from a family that was not affected by the flood. So, and he didn't put wild animals on his boat. That was embellished over the last 12,500 years. Then the last time the major rising of the seas happened was when the Lemurians, there were five countries, they bombed each other with hydrogen-sized bombs and broke up the continent, and it sank, and the seas rose again about 170 or 80 feet, again wiping out every major city and town and village along every coast all over the world. So it's no wonder that there aren't too many records left.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. Well, we've reached the hour point. I just wanted to give you an opportunity, if there's anything else that you wanted to say about your books or if you had a closing statement, I'd welcome that.
Okay, fantastic. I do encourage everybody to try and experiment with requesting benevolent outcomes in your life. You can go to my website. I've got sample chapters of each one of those Genoway books on there that you can, and I have my blogs for the last several years where I have those go out on Saturday, where I have nothing but MBO stories in each blog that are sent to me from people. So plenty of ways for you to get ideas on how to incorporate requesting benevolent outcomes in your life. So I do thank you for having me on, David.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
And it's www.thegentlewaybook.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, folks, that's the end of another show, so we're going to come to a close now. Let's pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience, who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, Tom.
Good night.
God bless everybody.